Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're going to turn our attention now to the question of TIFFs, which is an ongoing debate in the city, what they mean, who they serve, and what will be their future, and how will they be defined. Councilman Carl Stokes joins us by phone. He represents the 12th District in Baltimore City Council. He's also chair of Taxation, Finance, and the Economic Development Committee, where these hearings are taking place, that he is holding on TIFFs. Carl, I'm glad you could join us. Welcome.
Good morning, Mark. Hi. How are you doing?
Very, very well. Melody Simmons joins us, reporter for the Baltimore Business Journal, where she covers these issues for the BBJ, and is joining us from Las Vegas, where she is hanging out with everybody who are talking about this stuff in Las Vegas. How are you doing, Melody?
I'm doing well. It's quite a story out here.
Well, I want to hear about
a lot of deals.
I want to hear about it.
A lot of deals.
And Kim Truhart's in studio, longtime citizen activist who ran for President City Council and has much to say on the subject. Good to have you in the studio, Kim.
Thank you, Mark.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at email, talk@steinershow.org, tweet us at Mark Steiner, or go on to our Facebook pages. But do join us, 410-319-8888, with your questions, thoughts, and ideas on this question of TIFFs and development. So, Carl, let me start with you very quickly. So talk about the hearings that took place in your committee, because there was something in the paper about it, some papers about it. There were also short clips on TV. But what was the essence of what you did, and what did you hear, and where does it go from here?
Yeah, so the first hearing that I had last week, Mark, was not specifically about Fort Covington. What I did was have a TIFF 101 hearing. That is, I wanted to have a hearing where we educated and informed people exactly what TIFFs were. And I said were because they've morphed into something different than they started out. And at least in Baltimore, they had. When TIFFs started out, they were for small developers who a city or jurisdiction had to incentivize to do development in areas that were not considered necessarily profitable. Small development in distressed neighborhoods and blighted neighborhoods. And the thought was that if a jurisdiction would give that developer an incentive, that they would build or develop or do some economic activity in an otherwise neighborhood that they would not feel as profitable to do business in. But they've become something different in Baltimore. As you know, we do a number of different things, one of which is to decide whether a project deserves city funding, whether or not it will be profitable or not. There used to be a but-for clause. But for the city's money, the project would not work. Long story short, we had a hearing last week to talk about what a hearing was and what a hearing is. So BDC, the finance department, and the general public got to talk about it.
And so, Melody, how is this translating to where you are in Las Vegas, and what is your take on what you've been covering?
Well, there's a lot of movement. The market itself is really moving fast, particularly in Baltimore. There's a lot of talk about redevelopment, new development. The economy's a little better. Money is starting to flow. So what I'm seeing here in Vegas is there's a lot of people who are looking for, say, a new development, a grocery store in their neighborhood, possibly a big box store like Target, Walmart, and they want to have that. And they're going by these booths in the convention, kind of lobbying the corporate people. Can you take a look at us? Would you look at Baltimore? Would you look at West Baltimore? The Park Heights area is one group that's here that's really in search of looking for new development out there.
So who's there? I mean, when you say people from Park Heights,
the executive director of the Park Heights Renaissance is here. I had a nice talk with him yesterday. There's a lot going on out there. They're just waiting on an RFQ to come in Friday for a master developer. And they're actually hoping to build some mixed-use development out there. Would be the first new housing in Park Heights in decades.
Sounds interesting.
Kim?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that came out in Carl Stokes' hearing last week was the need for a supermarket in Cherry Hill. And it was connected to the Port Covington giveaway. You're laughing, Carl. The Port Covington $660 million giveaway. And, you know, that's something that needs to happen early on in that project. And it should be in close proximity to the folks who already live there. You know, be a good neighbor to Cherry Hill, Westport, and Mount Winans. That can happen now.
Yeah, that's true, Tim. One of the things that we should be negotiating, if we're going to negotiate at all, there are obviously many people who don't think that a TIF is necessary for this project. Be that as it may, if we are going to move toward a TIF in this project, certainly there must be a direct benefit, not an indirect benefit. We often hear, as we did in Harbor Point or even, frankly, in Harbor Place, that there would be an indirect benefit many years down the road for the neighborhood. And as we've seen thus far, that has not happened. If we're going to negotiate on this particular thing, there must be direct benefits day one. That is, mm-hmm. before there's a shovel in the ground at Fort Covington, Cherry Hill and Mount Winans, thank you, and Brooklyn and other communities ought to see improvements in their communities immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about these sewage overflows that occur. South Baltimore has historically had that problem. So if we're talking about infrastructure, let's work on that.
But the question becomes, there are a bunch of questions here. I mean, one is how these things are being decided. Melody, I mean, your face is in the forefront of the picture about the closed meeting that took place with BDC, and now the commission determined that the meeting should not have been closed to the public, right?
Right. We attended, myself and two other reporters attended a meeting at the BDC of the committee that was looking at the TIF request, and they ended up closing the meeting. We wanted to hear what they were going to talk about. I think that's only natural. They were talking about financials, but they were talking about the ins and outs of the TIF itself. And they tried to say that they were going to be going over some corporate propriety. They did not, because the Attorney General's office, we filed a complaint, they looked at the minutes of the meeting, and the minutes say nothing about that. So the there was an opinion issued yesterday that said the BDC erred. They did the wrong thing. They should not have closed that meeting to the public.
Congratulations.
First of all, the people at Baltimore Development Corporation are not stupid people. They know exactly what they were talking about in that meeting, and they were talking about a memoranda of understanding between the developer and the city on about inclusionary housing, workforce development, and the support of businesses, women-owned businesses, and minority businesses. They were looking at the city master plans, the light rail spur the developer wanted to put there, and they were looking for other sources of funding for the project to ensure the developer requests for funding from other sources, and he had them. That's what they were doing, Carl. So to me, that is just A,
right.
Unconscionable. It shouldn't have been allowed to happen. But B, the ball is now in your court, because the city council is the one that has to say is going to make this final decision to go off about where the next steps take, and that comes right out of your committee. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, Mark, you're right. You just said something. I'm going to answer what you just said. But
okay.
You said something important, because, you know, there are a lot of social media going on, and because people have made decisions, oftentimes people appear to be objective in their social media online. And yet yesterday I read one particular comment that said the BDC meant well, which, of course, I don't even know what that means. Mm-hmm. Because, as you just said, they're smart people. They're very smart people. So they don't mean well. They know exactly what they're doing. Having said that, my committee has to have, I would say, 2, 3, maybe 4 hearings on Port Covington. It's not something that people want to hear. It's not something that people on one side want to happen. They actually want me to hold the hearings quickly and be finished with them quickly, like in the next 45 days or so. But we have to have several hearings, mainly because so much has been already kept hidden. And I think transparency and breaking this almost 600-page application open. And by the way, the number has gone up from 535 to 660 million now. I saw the Sun paper was still quoting the 660 number this morning, but they have asked for 660 million. And then at the end of the day, that's really going to be about 2.5 $2 or $3 billion of outlay from the Baltimore taxpayers. Long story short, we're going to have more than one hearing, and we're going to have to lay this out in layers so that people really understand it. And not only that, but that the people asking for the TIF really tell us exactly what they're planning to do and why.
So before I turn to Kim, just one more quick question, Carl. Kim, jump right in. So I want to understand. I want our listeners to understand. So this was layered, and the it's gone through the finance committee before you,
right.
and before that planning. The BDC and planning, and now it comes to city council. So what is the critical role? What is the role the city council plays in this? In terms of how they vote on this, in terms of what comes out of your committee, can you alter the nature of this TIF?
Right.
The nature of rewrite the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
So what can you actually do?
We can rewrite the entire bill, Mark. With bills, you actually can line out every word in a particular bill, every word. You could wind up with just the title of the bill left. This is not unusual to either the city council or the state government or to Congress, for that matter. So we have the authority and ability at this point to amend, we call it amending the bill. We can amend the bill to say something quite different than it says now. For example, instead of $660 million, we could say we see about $110 million worth of worthy projects that we should do. And so we could strike the number 660 and insert the word 110. That's just an example. We haven't even begun to go through it line by line to see that. But, yeah, we're able at this point, now that it's in our committee, to rewrite the bill where we think it's necessary.
And not just the bill can be rewritten. There are three memorandums of agreement that you referenced,
Mark. Right, you're right.
And those three memorandums, one gives a waiver to the affordable housing law. We don't want a waiver. It calls for 10% of the housing to be affordable. We want 20% as is stated in the law. Now, to facilitate that, there has to be funds in the Affordable Housing Fund. But
which
that,
there are not.
Oh, no. That next week. When is the hearing on the bonds? That's this week, Thursday. There will be a bond bill that will be hopefully approved to go on the ballot to add $6 million to the Affordable Housing Fund.
But so the problem was, as I understand it, and Melody and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, the problem of the inclusionary housing law as it stands in Baltimore City now is that it is incumbent upon the city to pay that, mm-hmm. not the developer.
Right.
So $6 million won't get you very far.
Well, it'll get us enough for this project.
I'm not sure it will.
Well, and there's no money in the fund. So the fund itself has not been funded.
Replenished.
So
right.
You've got a problem there, and so you can't make it happen. You cannot, do what you say you were going to do. So
yeah,
there is a lot
can.
Of question about that. And I will add that the entire TIF application was made public around 4:35 p.m. on a Friday afternoon, right before the Finance Board met on Monday to vote on it. And it's just a massive application. There was not enough time to even read it, analyze it, ask questions of anybody about it before it went straight through the Finance Board.
And, one of the problems that Carl Stokes will fix before he leaves in December is the fact that the Finance Board does not allow public comment. I made a comment, blurted it out at the Finance Board meeting, and I was informed that public comments aren't allowed at that meeting. That needs to change. That, as well as BDC. And I'm sure Carl's going to come through for us.
I don't know if you saw the election results.
I'm throwing my 37,000 votes your way. Give you a little clap.
I don't think you can do that. Let me open the phones here. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts for our guests as we explore TIFs. We'll do this again next week. We're going to follow the hearings that Carl Stokes is going to be running. And we'll be on this. And we're going to invite BDC to come on the show. We'll see. I hope they will join us here to talk about what the role in this and where we're going to go. It's a huge, important issue. And I... And I want to talk a little bit about whether or not the city council could pass a law that has teeth in inclusionary housing. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Clarence, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Thanks for calling.
You know, and good morning to your guests, all of you. Hey, Mr. Stokes, you know, in a real fair world, well, Port Covington, we'll get back to you in about 5 years. Right now, we're looking for a developer who's going to try to develop West Baltimore and improve the quality of some people's lives up there. So come back with us in 5 or 6 years, and we'll talk to you about a TIF for Port Covington. Thank you, Mr. Stokes.
Carl?
Yeah. I kind of sort of tried that, and 4 years ago at Harbor Point, and I felt like I'd gotten run over by a train. There's no doubt that this train has left the station, and it's moving pretty fast, and I think that we'll have to stand in front of it again. Hopefully there are more people standing, and that we could at least divert this train if we can't stop it. There is a lot of good that can happen here for those six communities, as well as citywide, frankly. But we have to work in transparency, and we have to work with folks who are going to stay standing. I know Kim always does. That's not a question there, but we really have to work hard to make this happen, and we need to bring together a lot of the people in Cherry Hill and Wineland and all of those neighborhoods. And again, across the city, we need a citywide coalition. Let's just talk about the inclusionary housing. What we were able to do with another group in Poppleton, the CTA, is they also did not have to. They received a waiver from doing any inclusionary housing. But I asked them to do it on their own, to put their own money up. And they did put their own money up to do a certain percentage of inclusionary housing in that project on Poppleton. And so we are going to get inclusionary housing there, even though the city's not paying any money at all. And we are absolutely going to ask Port Covington to pay for inclusionary housing in this particular project.
I wonder where we think the future is going here. Let me throw something out that may be so minor that may not mean anything, but I got it just for some reason stuck in me. And I think I saw this first in the article that you wrote, Melody, about the developments taking place in Baltimore, planned developments, and one was the Highway to Nowhere. And let me just bring this up because and the planned development for that thing. And then you had, I think, attached to your article, Melody, were these artist renderings, right?
Right.
This is what struck me. And this, maybe I'm being a little over the top here, but I'm going to throw it out anyway. So I look at these renderings, and what struck me looking at those pictures is they were all white people in those pictures.
That's right. It was weird.
So what does it say? What does it say about what, except for one person? So what does it say about what the idea is about why they're developing this and who's going to be living there?
Well, it says that there's a lot of questions when you're working at a quick pace. And questions arise, and they're not answered. And then, like at the BDC, it's not transparent. You can't hear the dialogue. You can't hear the discussion about a concept, about an application, about moving forward with something. I spoke with a developer out here at Vegas yesterday, and this is the big developer for Sparrows Point. And they're putting in a retail center out there, and they're paying for their own infrastructure. They're not going for a TIF. There are some tax breaks that the state has granted to that site, like they're going to forgive the 6% sales tax for any construction materials. That's a break they're going to get. But they're not. The county itself is not going to go in and put in new water and sewer at Sparrows Point, new sidewalks, new lighting. They're not going to do it. They didn't even ask.
I mean, you can jump in, but one of the things that Kevin Kamenetz said in the show, and he's very friendly with developers. Some people think he's too developer-friendly in Baltimore County, but they do not give these kind of tips out to anybody who develop in the county.
Yeah, it makes no sense. You know, going back to the point about planning, you know, the Baltimore City Master Plan, the Comprehensive Master Plan, is dated 2008. It was last updated during the Mayor Dixon administration. I've been asking for the last 4 years that we look at the Comprehensive Master Plan, because all we do is react to concepts and proposals. There's no big strategy. There's no planning that goes on to embrace our neighborhoods or address any of the issues. And right now, you know, any developer that jumps up, they're going to respond and throw money at them. And that's totally unfair because it does not address the most needy in our communities.
Let me open the phones again at 410-319-8888. Jeffrey, welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning. You know, this TIF and this Baltimore Development Corporation, you know, it has its genesis way back when Donald Schaefer wanted to transform the city into a white-collar town and essentially just screwed all the blue-collar workers. And since then, the city council, I think, who's always been the last bulkhead against allowing this TIF and BDC to evolve into what they are now, which is to build a totally separate city, you know, walled off from everybody else, has been negligent in holding the city council responsible for simply saying, like, at one time, no, you know, the people who live in the city is what the city should be servicing, not trying to bring in beautiful people from counties who have lots of money. And so I know I hear all this talk about the TIFs and things, but, you know, the thing that really burns me up is that we've had city council people who have been reelected, and reelected, and these TIFs and BTC has been evolving, and the monies have been going to rich billionaires, and nothing. It's almost as if whoever we've elected to office has no willpower to say, stop. The people in the city demand better, and we're simply ignoring them. And so, you know, it's always good to shift the blame, you know, like your earlier conversation about the police, shift the blame. But I think the city council members, everybody on that city council, including your guest caller, I think have been ultimately responsible for the demise of this city and the terrible shape that we are in now.
Amen. I agree.
Jeffrey, appreciate the call. Carl, why don't you, I heard you trying to jump in. Why don't you jump in?
Sure. You know, first of all, William Donald Schaefer was against this and wouldn't use them, even though
That's
he
true.
Had the ability to. He actually told us, he said he wouldn't do it, and the state of Maryland decided to pass legislation, Pete Rawlings, to have TIF statewide, but Baltimore was exempt from that law because Donald Schaefer thought that TIFs were a bad thing. He thought that, one, you shouldn't be giving millions of dollars to wealthy people. He actually said that. Two, he thought that if you start doing TIFs, you would divide and pit neighborhoods one against the other. Who would get the special breaks? Who would not get the special breaks? Today, as you know, over 99% of developers in Baltimore City do not ask for TIFs. Do not ask for TIFs. Only a handful of folks have gotten TIFs. And there are many developers today building whole blocks of poverty in Baltimore City, like in Remington and other places, but they're paying for their own infrastructure. That's one thing. Secondly, I think the council has rolled over, on some of these TIFs, not all of them, but on some of them, they have rolled over. And what we're finding, Melanie and I are finding out here in Vegas, both of you guys, is that developers such as, landlords such as Harbor Point or the Gallery across the street are losing a lot of money and are looking to sell their properties because they're throwing up their hands and saying they can't compete with Harbor East, that the business has moved south and east. And I'm telling you, we're not New York or Los Angeles. Business is going to move more south to Port Covington. You're going to see the cannibalization of much of downtown Baltimore, as you've already seen, with office buildings moving across Pratt Street and now retail moving across Pratt Street to Alexandra and Thames and those parts of the city. The same thing I'm predicting is going to happen at Port Covington. And we're seeing developers out here dumping or trying to dump their properties.
So I want to read this. Jeff Singer just wrote in. I'll let you jump right in here, Kim. Jeff Singer just wrote in about inclusionary housing. Let me just read what he wrote. It's interesting. He said, no, the city does not have to pay the developer. It's complicated. But the law says the developer can't be forced to lose money by creating affordable housing. That can be done without the city paying for it. Also, the law requires 10% of affordable housing when there is, quote, significant land use authorization or rezoning, end quote, with no financial offset. And the but-for language in the TIF application is an outrage. Quote,
it is
currently estimated that the total infrastructure required for the construction of the development within development district is $1,183,207,735. Investment of this magnitude would not be feasible solely by the private sector and necessitates public participation to allow development to progress, end quote. Page 47 of the TIF application. Then he closes with, Forbes estimates Blank's net worth at $1.81 billion as of today. Other sources suggest estimates as high as $3.7 billion. Clearly, Blank himself could pay for the infrastructure and remain comfortably in the top 0.1% of the population with respect to wealth. Should he demur, his corporation easily could foot the bill. Under Armour's corporate value may be as high as $23 billion.
You know, one other thing, his
thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, his ability to go out into the marketplace and get credit, you know, far exceeds the city's. Because right now, this new TIF package exceeds the city's bond ceiling. And so what have they done? They've decided that portions of the bonds that the city can't float on its own on Wall Street, the state, some state entity will step in and take over. Now, I wonder what that ceiling is for the city, because the last time we did the 107 for Harbor Point, we also could not float those bonds on our own and had to also include in that TIF language that the state would step in to help. And so if we can't afford $107 million, how do we even think about $660 million?
So Melody, what is this scuttlebutt you're hearing as a reporter about all this we're saying?
Well, excuse me, I've got some...
I can hear it.
It's dry out here.
I'm going to send you some chicken soup.
I am hearing that there is a lot of talk about maybe another TIF coming in to City Hall. This would not be the Port Covington TIF. So these issues are, you know, still they're not settled. There's another development that's kind of bubbling in the city, and I will be writing about it later today.
Okay.
But basically, there's talk of them coming in asking for a TIF in the next year.
Right.
So we've already hit the TIF limit, and some of the discussion that the BDC's board had behind the closed doors was about the limit, was about having to go to Medco and having the state, you know, pick up and sell the bonds for the city to take the risk. We were not privy to hear that discussion.
I think the state should take them all. If they want this badly enough, the city is burdened enough, and let the state float all the bonds.
And pay for them too, Kim?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, didn't Governor Hogan say he wants to help us?
Absolutely.
Okay. This is a great way.
But if you're living in Cecil County or out on the Eastern Shore, I'm not sure you're going to be too happy about the whole state and your liability as a taxpayer out there.
I hear what you're saying, Melody, but we're approaching $1 billion in giveaway here in this city if another one comes up, right? You know, we can't afford that.
Well, I mean, I think there are a lot of questions that have to be answered here. And so, Krog, what's the schedule of your hearings before we have to roll here for our next segment? What's the schedule for your hearings? Do you have it yet?
Yeah, the late July, we're going to announce it on June 6th. I haven't confirmed it, but it looks like the last week of July would be the first of the hearings on the TIF.
So do you think they'll be done before the next mayor and city council take office?
No doubt. No doubt. It will be done. Now, you know, I frankly think we should spend a year or two looking at this. I do feel that. However, the train is moving down the station, and I'm afraid that if we don't handle this, tackle this, it will be pulled from my committee, to be frank with you, and that it will happen without me, and not that it can't, but it will happen without the conversation that we need to have. And so I'm going to schedule a series of hearings between now and the fall.
But, I mean, quick question. We really have to roll here. We have other guests waiting to come in the studio. But what do you mean pulled from your committee? Who could pull it from your committee? You're talking about the president, city council?
The president and the rest of the city council. It's what happened on Harbor East or Harbor Point.
That's what happened.
I wanted enough.
What'd you say, Melody?
That is what happened. Yeah.
Right. It was
there
pulled
was
from our committee.
Yeah,
I was running a hearing.
Pull the bill out.
I was running a hearing, and I called for a recess. And I called for the motion. I remember that.
Yeah. We're going to come back to all this with the three of you and more, and we'll do lead-ups to the council hearings in your committee in July, and we'll be following this very closely. We are going to ask BDC, we are going to ask Sagamore if they will join us. We'll see. We'll be on it. I think it's really important for the future of the city, how we can develop, what we develop, and the way we do it. Melody Simmons, reporter for Baltimore Business Journal, thank you so much. Thank you for all the work you're doing, Melody. You're one of the best reporters out there. Appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Looking forward to your story today. Kim Chuhart, stay with it and keep the fight up. I know you're not going to stop.
Not stopping.
And Councilman Carl Stokes, 12th District Chair of the Taxation, Finance, and Economic Development Committee. Thanks so much, man. Good. Appreciate you, and thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. We can take a short break. I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. Stay with us. When we come back, we are going to take a little trip to Syria and Iraq, see what's going on. Don't go away.